Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, or should I say the Dog Days episode, as it is humid as all get out. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Beer Guy, Silent Phil, our producer. Special guest today, before we jump in, is Jeff Ruby, Culinary Entertainment CEO, Brittany Ruby Miller. If you listened to last week's episode with Steve Leeper, you heard Brittany referenced, and we thought, hey, let's have Brittany on, talk about the move to Fountain Square for Jeff Ruby Steakhouse, and her role in trying to help with all this restaurant stuff around COVID with the state. I know she was very influential in working with the governor on that. So, and just how her story and how she got to be the CEO of her father's restaurant empire.
I feel like it was an epic mistake on our part not to take the podcast on the road to one of the restaurants. But here we are.
Here we are. And we'll catch up with Brittany here in just a few minutes. But first, we are in our political segment of the show. And
have you been looking for me, Jason? Because I am knee deep in council candidates.
That's where you've been.
Yes. I'm trying to put together, God willing, by the time this episode airs, we're going to have a list and I will have a little bit about all the candidates for everyone. The filing deadline, August 19th, Thursday.
Yeah, was it 4 p.m.?
Correct.
End of business day.
Yeah. I'm like, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. Yeah, every day there's new people added to the list.
And where is it at? I checked with the BOE yesterday. They said 36 of... Goodness, almost. Well, I think they said 96 people had pulled petitions. Maybe
is that, you know what? It was an epic year for pulling petitions, and you know there was a lot of talk about, oh, could 80 people run? But I'll tell you what, I think we're at 37. That number is fluid because they're validating
that was early in the day,
signatures. So, yeah. But it is an insane number. That is like the most since 1991. And so it was like, oh, could 80 people run? 37, as I'm doing all of the research and getting to know them, is a lot of candidates to sort.
I think it was 33 last time.
Through. Yeah.
That is, and then the Board of Elections said they were projecting it could go up to 40.
Yes.
By 4 p.m. As we record, it'll be tomorrow. So you may be listening to this.
My list is from yesterday.
Wednesday night, added like Thursday during the day. Yeah. And obviously over the weekend, if you're listening, this will already have been done. But yeah, looking at it, roughly around 40 people filing for the city council race. A lot of new names. A lot of new names. Not a lot of recognizable names to the voters, that is. What's your elevator take, speech take on this field so far, Cher?
You know, I've been talking about this now, like as I do my research with a bunch of people. It'll be interesting to see which way people go. Are people going to say, voters, more to voters, going to say, who are these new people and try and get to know them, or be confused and say, okay, thanks for the slates and just go
That's
straight
a great
slate.
Point.
There's some interesting people on the list. I just got off the phone with Tierra Powell. She is on the East Westwood Community Council. Mm-hmm. Saw her there, you know, we're talking about violence. She grew up in that neighborhood, and she's still really active there. You know, but she's a small business owner, active in the neighborhood. And, like, I want people to kind of give the Tierra Powells of this race, there's more than her, a chance. A new name that we haven't seen on the list, Reverend Peterson Mingo.
Oh, wow.
You know, really, he started.
He's filed.
Yes. And I think he has the valid signatures. He said he was waiting to hear. It looks like on the list that he did. So, but he's turned them in for sure. Mm-hmm. And he started the street worker program that we talk about a lot, about combating violence. And now he's part of the God Squad. And so I don't want people to take this is like my endorsement of anybody, but I'm just kind of like looking
at
this
list. Analyzing, breaking it down a little bit.
Jim Tarbell made the list, former vice mayor. Saw that. Kevin Flynn, too, racking up some endorsements as an independent who didn't run again after a 4-year stint. He think he could make it through without the endorsement. Still, he's been on the park board since he left.
And, you know, I think of, you know, the handful. And then this is just, I haven't seen the full list of names. I was just given the number by the Board of Elections. But, you know, just in what I've known from talking with you, Sherry, and reporting and talking with others in the political world, you know, some of the other recognizable names would be obviously Greg Landsman, who is the only, it's amazing to think this, that he is the only, how do I say this? The only elected incumbent from 2017 who's back on the ballot. It's really amazing to think that's where we're at. So obviously Greg Landsman. And then I think, you know, probably at least people who pay general attention to city politics will know that, you know, the folks who have been appointed to the council in the past year, and that's Liz Keating, Betsy Sunderman, Steve Gooden. Am I missing someone?
Jan Michelle
Lemon Kearney. Yeah, definitely. Jan Michelle is certainly well known, you know, for her work in the business and publisher of the Cincinnati Herald, and having a TV show for several years on, I believe it was Channel 5. So
another one to watch that's kind of on my radar is Brian Gary. You know, he's run before, you know, it's like, not even like, he's not like even like 10th or 11th, but you know, he's in the mix. He's really, I think, raised his profile as a neighborhood activist and just really being a champion for people in need in our community. It's like, I always am like, oh, like there's kind of like a story bubbling up from one of the neighborhoods. There's Brian Gary.
There's Brian Gary, yeah.
And I have to say, and some people at City Hall kind of roll their eyes, but that's not what I hear from the people. When I'm writing these stories and the people he's helping, he means a lot to them. And he is like, he's a voice like that. And so he understands the needs in our neighborhoods, his anti-establishment kind of way. So I'm kind of interested to see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you've pulled your clipboard out here,
I did.
I'm expecting you to go get you have a nice printed out list from the board. No, this is a handwritten list that Sherry, this is Sherry. This is the kind of reporter that she is. And she's got a running
purple pen, Jason.
Purple pen.
Look at
on
the sheet is front. It's small. I snagged this piece of paper from my son's school supplies. It's skinny lined notebook paper.
Love it.
Front.
Not double spaced either.
And back. Front and back. So
awesome.
That's like, it's kind of crazy.
I will say, I think it's certainly, you know, I wrote a column on Cincinnati.com today and talking about sort of, do people care? And yeah, on one hand, you look at the kind of the lack of experienced candidates on this list and say, ooh, that's kind of tough. But on the other hand, there is a mix of some experience. Clearly, when you look at Greg Landsman and Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney, Kevin Flynn, that's a strong core of experienced public officials there. A couple other people, and then if I'm out there, there's a lot of encouraging, you know, young, not necessarily young, but just first time candidates on this list that I think are really going about this and are approaching this with the right intentions in mind and are motivated by what they've seen and are frustrated by what they've seen at City Hall and want to help, want to be part of the solution.
Think about this. I just did some scratch math. Mm-hmm. These people needed 500 signatures. Now, people can sign, I think, up to 9 petitions. But if you take the 37 candidates on this list times 500, 18,500 signatures.
Wow.
Went into this list.
That's right, because you can only sign, as an individual, you can only sign up to 3, right, and be valid?
You know what? I don't know what that number is, but I will sort that out.
I think it's something along those lines.
What that number is.
Yeah, whoever would get them in first.
But you can't have signed all of them. You can't just...
Correct. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, to think of it in that way. That's a really good point.
Here's another name on the list. Derek Bauman. So, you know, people... So, of course, he got his signatures before he paused his campaign, after it came to light some... I don't want to even say inappropriate, racist, misogynistic tweets from a decade ago came to light, paused his campaign. That's what he said. And it's my understanding he isn't going to run.
Okay.
But you can pull your name off the ballot. And he has not done that.
Wow.
He is on this ballot. That's going to go forward.
As we sit here just a little over 24 hours from the deadline.
Yeah. So, and we saw another candidate pull his name off. He has, you know, long haul symptoms from COVID. And so, like, you can pull your name off. And he did that and said, you know, he wasn't one of these endorsed people, but he had said, I'm running for council, turned in signatures, and then said, I can't, right? So, like, a responsible way to kind of, like, so people aren't like, what happened?
So does there, I mean, just to, if you're on that list of 36 right now, that means you filed that. Obviously, it's then certified by the board. I believe they gave me the date. It's like first week of September,
correct.
I believe.
They have a couple of days because you can turn in up until 4 tomorrow.
Okay.
And they have then time to certify those signatures and
does
go
Derek
through and make
Bauman,
sure.
Does Derek Bauman, someone like that, then have up until the time the board meets to certify to pull his name off of it if he doesn't officially want to be on the ballot?
I don't know. Look at Jason, Editor Williams over there. I'll sort these questions out.
I kicked into Carl mode. Our editor Carl is on vacation right now, so I'm like,
I was missing
like
him
asking
anyway.
Carl,
so here
Carl
we are.
Ask questions here.
All right. What's the big unknown, Jason?
We love you, Carl.
What's the big unknown? Charlie Winburn.
Yes. That's funny. I was driving
Winburn,
and I'm like, I was going to ask Sherry.
Republican. Like, I heard he's going to file, but I think in typical Charlie Winburn fashion.
Yeah.
At the last second. You know what? I wouldn't have it any other way, Jason, because, you know, what would the list be without a little drama at the last second tomorrow?
And I know Charlie was looking at some other career options as well. But I think, yeah, he ends up filing to run just again. Putting my crystal ball on, not my crystal ball on. My prediction hat.
And pulling out your crystal ball. I like it. Mixed metaphors today, everybody.
My fuzzy, my cloudy crystal ball. Anyway, I don't think the Shabbat campaign is still letting me live it down that I didn't call that race right in 2020. Anyway.
Everyone makes a mistake now and then.
It's something fun. As you know, we do this every year. And I tell you what, though, trying to predict this council race is
I mean, again, going back, are these going to dilute? You're going to have so many people that it'll dilute the slate, or they're just people rely on it more. Like, it is really hard to know. And we'll be watching closely of how things are shaking out as we go along.
Here's my dream council.
Are you going to go 7? Are you going to go 9 right now?
Yes, I'm going to go 9.
Do it. Wow.
Here's real simple.
Okay.
I'd like to see 3 charter candidates on there. I'd like to see 3 Democrats on there. I'd like to see 3 Republicans, period. There you go. How's that for what I'd like
to
see?
I thought you were going to go names. We'll wait for that column, though. It'll come. Predictions will come later.
I do have a list, but I wanted to see until
it's too early
list.
For any.
It's way too
it's
early.
It's too early.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, I'm just getting to know people. Like I said, I just got off the phone with Tierra Powell. We will get to know them over these next, few months, but it's really like a few weeks.
Yeah, and you're right. You're talking about being too early. I talked to Jared Camras, the Democratic strategist here in town, for my column today. And, you know, that was exactly his point was it's too early to predict whether this is going to be a sleepy election or not. This is all anecdotal, but you and I both talked to a lot of people. We observed the lay of the land and, you know, it's just been, if you think back 4 years ago, Sherry, it was during that interim council meeting where they meet the first week of August or 1 week in August, and they go back to their summer recess was when the defining moment of that race came about. And that was the Children's Hospital project around. I don't need to go up through rehash that, but that was, you know, that Yvette Simpson tried to get Children's to give millions of more dollars over to the neighborhood in exchange for her voting to support that project. I mean, and then Cranley ran with it and won the election on it.
But we are seeing we're in a different place, which could mean more of that or less of that, because we have John Cranley term limited out, but running for governor. So how much attention is he going to try and do last minute things that he always wanted to do in his 8 years? Or is he really going to, it's been a long 8 years. Is he going to turn his attention, think I did my big things, turn his attention more and not, you know, have these big things? So that could flip either way.
And so what you're saying is, what if he does something that could that could determine whether there's a defining issue in...
If somebody brings some big project forward.
And that could end up being a defining issue in this race.
Correct.
The council and mayor race.
Yes. So, like, are we going to have these last-minute big things, or are we going to coast through with this current council?
That's great. Great point. And because of right now...
And you said, too, in your column about underdog David Mann, you know, came in second in the primary, but he's on council every single Wednesday. There he's going to be.
Is a campaign opportunity.
Yes. Yes. And he would not be the first person to use the sitting seat as a campaign opportunity. So,
kind of like what happened 4 years ago this month when the children's thing happened.
So things could shift. We'll see.
Yeah. But as of right now, and it's interesting to kind of look back, and you've been covering this. You've watched this up close more than anyone else. It's interesting to sort of look back and look at trends. And this time over at least the last two election cycles, there was that real just clear cut defining issue in the race. You go back, almost 8 years now to 2013. And, you know, the defining issue was streetcar or no streetcar. It's amazing to think that was a decade ago.
What do you speak of? No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. But yeah, that was the defining issue. Yeah. And then the privatization of the parking system as well. And John Cranley said no to the streetcar and no to the parking privatization. Roxanne Qualls said yes to both. And the voters said, we want John Cranley.
What's the only thing that matters about parking today? That you can do it from your iPhone.
That's right.
As someone who parks downtown.
And then if you get a ticket, it's $45, I believe, right?
Yeah, council kind of keeps an eye on that. Ouch. They don't want that cost to be too high.
Knock on wood, I haven't got one in a long time.
Oh, Jason.
Yeah, watch now. I'll be on here next week saying I got a dang parking ticket. You watch. Anyway.
All right.
Should we shift over?
Definitely. And, let's talk about some fun stuff.
Absolutely. Brittany Ruby Miller. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome to the podcast for the first time, Brittany Ruby Miller. She's CEO of Jeff Ruby Culinary Entertainment. Certainly that Ruby name, you really need no introduction, but we introduce you anyway, Brittany Ruby Miller. Brittany, how are you?
I am great and just thrilled to be on your podcast. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's jump to the fun news. Well, it's all fun stuff, but you know the news, I guess. And is that recent news broke that Jeff Ruby Steakhouse is going to Fountain Square, and
the Foundry. I think we're supposed to start really calling it by what they like the new name, the Foundry,
the old Macy's store, the Foundry, right on Fountain Square. Talk about that, Brittany. And you know, we had Steve Leeper on last week, and he had referenced you and how the whole conversation started with Adam Gelter from 3CDC. And take it away and tell us how that all came about.
Yeah. Honestly, it was a little bit of strategy, and I said a lot of serendipity, because, you know, I didn't even know about what they were doing, to be honest with you. We had come out of a strategic planning process prior to COVID, so about December of 2019. And through that process, our executive team and focus group within the company really started to feel that there was a niche, and that there would be potentially some good business in the catering, off-premise catering and events that, we love Cincinnati so much. And as opposed to going to a new market for growth and expansion, we had heard through our guests, and we do a lot of off-premise catering. The challenge is we don't have really the instrument to be able to execute it as the demand is there. And so we started thinking about this, and part of kind of our 18-month plan was to start getting more aggressive, and then COVID hit. And we had a couple other sparkles in there that we were going to be focused on, but COVID hits, and all of that is just every single piece of strategic planning went just, by the wayside. It was time to just focus really on keeping the company afloat and strategy to keep the legacy of my father for the next 50 years alive.
How difficult was it to make the decision to do takeout?
Oh, that to do takeout, that was actually when the news broke about being forced to shut down completely. I was on the phone with John Barker from the Ohio Restaurant Association. God bless him. He really was there every call, and not just for me, but for his, I guess, hundreds of members. But we advocated. I had just had dinner with the Husteds, Tina and Lieutenant John Husted, Lieutenant Governor, before, maybe a few weeks before. And so we had built a pretty good relationship. He's a former foster care, you know, kid, and we're very involved with that through our foundation. And so we had dinner in Columbus and kind of gave us a warning that it's about to get bad. And I was one of those people that stocked up, like, you know, we were on our way back from Columbus that day. And anyways, point is, I knew it was going to get bad. We had a relationship with him. And so through the Ohio Restaurant Association and that relationship, I called Tina immediately. And I know John had already asked Governor DeWine for advocating for carry out. Just please do not shut us completely down. At least let us do carry out. But, you know, the truth is the carry out business isn't there. The carry out business is not there at a time when you have to keep the machine running and you have to keep, you know, the lights on and enough folks employed. It really was a difficult business model. And so it needed to happen because, you know, we service 51% of the food supply chain in America. And so if you don't offer that at a time where, you know, Kroger was overwhelmed, people were like, where are we, you know, where are we going to get our food from?
Right. You're talking about restaurants as a whole, 51%. Restaurants just supply the food, and so we needed to keep that up. But for yourself, though, I mean, your takeout kits, we did it occasionally over the pandemic. Like, the high quality of, you know, the food that we were getting, these kits were just, you know, adjacent to going to a restaurant. Uh-huh. I feel like that was really hard to execute at such a high level.
Well, we really appreciate that because I had given a press conference. Mayor Cranley asked me to come on, and literally like a couple of days after we shut down, and that's where we really pressed and pushed and to promote carry out, not just for Jeff Ruby's, my God, for the entire city. It really was a moment where all of us came together and we realized we need this industry to stay strong. And so, but that night I went to the precinct. My husband did. Christian Piatoso, my friend from, you know, Forno and Via Vita, the wonderful restaurants, had dropped off a lasagna for us. And so Caleb went to the precinct, and that night we gridlocked. We didn't gridlock. The community gridlocked Delta Columbia Parkway. Caleb called me and said, there's cops here. There are hundreds of people outside trying to get carry out. And it was a mess. I mean, we weren't able to service it. I've never seen the VP of operations has never in his entire career, 25 years with us, told us this is a train wreck. It was bad. And now the flip side of that was how heartwarming it was that Cincinnati, you know, came together and I show up and I'm literally with Charlie Bledsoe, our longtime general manager, passing out toilet paper and Corona in the precinct, white tablecloth fine dining restaurant, saying, I'm so sorry. We've refunded thousands of dollars that day. And, but what that did was it really, for me as the leader, I pulled our core group together that night. We stopped everything and we just said, time out. We can't do this. The looks on their face, they were just defeated and devastated. So we took a break. We took like a month off, kept a good amount of people employed at the time. And it was really, we challenged our team to say, you know, this hot food carryout thing is necessary, but what else can we be doing? And that's when my friend Travis Myers, he was our corporate or culinary director, had the conceptualized the meal kits, which is more of a grocery style kit. And we priced it drastically under what it would be in the restaurants, which was definitely a risk. But we felt that it wouldn't, you know, eventually let's keep this revenue stream going. And for that, the following month, so by taking a break, taking our time and thinking this through, the following month, it really carried payroll for the folks that we kept on the payroll and continues to this day to be a very good revenue stream. But I love, and my family loves, this is a way that you can still get the job experience, take it home, and still have that type of quality food. And, you know, maybe not the chandeliers and the ambiance and all the drama you get at Jeff Ruby Steakhouses, but there's still an opportunity, and it has not, you know, we thought, would it cannibalize sales? Would it hurt restaurants' sales? And it really hasn't. So it's here to stay for a while. So I appreciate your kind words that you like it.
So we kind of felt like we were over, like we're back to full capacity, you know, after the spring. What are the conversations like now with the Restaurant Association and where things are going right now?
I thought the marathon was, we were about to cross the finish line a few weeks ago, and it's been challenging. It's been difficult. We're nowhere near out of the clear. The good news in Ohio, is Governor DeWine, at least, I mean, I guess some people don't think it's good news because there's people who believe that we should be shut back down, and I'm not here to, convince them whatever their thoughts are. But I can tell you for operators and business people, you know, our opinion is that we should not be shut back down again, and we shouldn't even be having this conversation. And the good news is DeWine and Houston have publicly stated that they're not going to shut us down, that they're, you know, and I know the controversies of the vaccine and the masks and all of that, but that they're leaving it up to the business leaders to make those decisions. Not the same in Kentucky. I have less faith that there won't be, you know, more mandates to come. And we have two there, Lexington and Louisville. And so we go back to what did we learn, you know, when we were shut down. And I had our team go through right when we came out of the lockdown, top 10 COVID learnings. And I didn't want us to get amnesia and forget what it was really like. You know, like, what was it like? What's it like when you're pregnant? You kind of forget about that when you have
absolutely
the kid.
Like,
what are all the feelings and what did we learn? And so we kind of live by those top 10 COVID learnings, and all you can do is prepare, you know, as much as you possibly can. And for me, it's not just stepping up and trying to, you know, run the day-to-day business with our team, but it's also doing my part to be able to use our relationships with political leaders and elected officials to push to make sure that we're not shut back down again.
How difficult has it been? So we've heard a lot about the hiring. We've had some restaurateurs on the podcast in recent weeks, and we saw John Lonnie. He came to the CNN town hall and he talked about how difficult it was to find employees. So it's like the flip side of keeping a business open. It's not just, you know, the food and how are you going to do it? You actually have to have a workforce too. How has that been?
The president came in and our friend John Lonnie asked a very valid question. What are we going to do to incentivize people to get back to work? And the answer was, with all due respect to the president, and I say that very sincerely, his response was inaccurate. So his response to John was, well, John, you need to pay more than $7 or $8 an hour. And that is not accurate. That is not true. I could go down the rabbit hole on this and I'm not going to, but it just simply is not true. Our folks make great money. This is not just a restaurant industry crisis, the labor crisis. I don't care who you talk to, whether it's manufacturing, you know, it's everywhere. Service, we have a labor crisis. And do I believe that it's only because of the unemployment? Absolutely not. Do I think it's a contributing factor? Absolutely so. I believe that there are many different factors that are going into why we're seeing this. For us in restaurants, there's nothing more heartbreaking than, you know, especially these mom and pops, seeing that they're closed. I mean, I ran into that in Nashville. Our chef told me he worked 40 days straight. I had no idea. And I remember calling our team, I'm like, you guys, this is crazy. The demand is there. The business is there. People are wanting to get out. People are wanting to enjoy life, escape reality in a very safe environment. A restaurant is very, very safe. And it is, it's absolutely true that we do not have the manpower. Anybody you ask in this industry right now is short-staffed. So it's extremely difficult. I do think that there's a lot of patience and forgiveness from guests and customers that are eating at restaurants. But, you know, we come out of COVID. I miscommunicated that. We're not out of COVID. We think we come out of COVID. We think we're on, you know, the upswing. We think we're opening the floodgates now. People are, phones are ringing off the hook at all these places. And instead now it's like, you know, a sucker punch again that you've got to close just because you need your people to rest, or you just don't have the mom and pops just do not have the help. So, you know, I hate to be doom and gloom, but that's kind of where we are right now. And I think hopefully it's getting better. I hear, and what we're seeing is it's a little bit better now with, you know, school starting, college starting, you know, the unemployment did, you know, definitely did help, in Ohio. It's been difficult. It definitely has been difficult. And, you know, we're seeing it, and I know my competitors are seeing it, and the mom and pops are definitely experiencing it. So.
Brittany, and a lot of this stuff you're talking about, you've led on. You've not only led for your organization, but you've led for restaurants in the state of Ohio, and that's big, small, whatever restaurants. And talking about your leadership, and you have taken on more of a front role in the organization. You've moved into the CEO role, and it's interesting to hear you talked about the top 10 COVID lessons that you guys had written down, and that's a page right out of your dad's book. And I know he's got what is it, the list of 40, you know, best things to do for customer service or something like that. I can't think of it. Yeah. Talk about your role and how you got to this, obviously your dad, but was that always your dream to take over your dad's company someday and run it?
It was not always my dream, but as I was always loved being in the operations, and started when I was 15, at the waterfront. And so, you know, I fell in love with the restaurant industry, my dad was my greatest mentor. There was a time I was actually going to go into sports broadcasting and then do some other things, maybe with cooking. And honestly, we had a little bit of a relationship with the Food Network and opened a catering company, kind of did my own thing. And then really just as I continued to work in the business, fell more and more in love. And it was not a hard decision for me to get involved. But I will say it wasn't just, hey, I want to become CEO. It was just, I just wanted to continue to grow and to, you know, stay in our business. And then as I guess I got older and I spent about 20 years in our operations, and now it's been about, I guess 10 years at the corporate office. And we had some really good, you know, my dad had a VP that came in from Hilton who worked with us, opened up the waterfront, and he really came in for a couple of years to not only help scale our business and expand, but to mentor me. So I spent a good amount of time with Russell, which was such a blessing. And then I think at that point when he was ready to retire, he and my father got together and said, here's the keys. But it's not that Jeff Ruby has checked out by any means. He's still around and a phone call away. And I tell you, he was my rock during COVID. You know, people look at restaurant operators sometimes, and I think they underestimate the business people that they are. And my dad's one of the smartest people I know, with the highest IQ that I know. And so I had a great board of advisors, and also him helping me with decisions and making sure that this, you know, I'm not off on an island, you know, making stupid decisions, because we're all stressed out from COVID, and who knows, you know how you are when you make decisions when you're stressed. I had him as my rock there. And so I think it really just kind of naturally happened. And I know now he's the greatest thing about my dad. Well, there's so many great things about him, but a lot of times family businesses, the founder has a hard time not micromanaging and controlling, and he's the opposite. I think he's got enough confidence in my brothers and I in our executive leadership team, and he sees the business and knows that, you know, this isn't, we're not going to get away from everything that we know got us to where we are right now, which is the Jeff Ruby experience and taking care of our guests and taking care of our employees.
Yeah.
So it kind of happened naturally, I guess.
Which restaurant did you work in first?
I was at the Waterfront for about 5 years, and with Charlie Bledsoe, who also was one of my mentors. And then we opened, you know, then he started opening Carlo and Johnny and Belterra and Louisville. And so I would go and open those restaurants up with him and with our team. And then I served for a very long time at Jeff Ruby's Steakhouse, and which I did not want to do at first. Admittingly, I thought when I graduated from UC that I was ready to go to corporate, and he said, no, you're not putting on a power suit, you're putting on a server suit and a server uniform. And I spent, you know, a couple of years, few years there actually, being trained by our veteran server, Tony Friedman, in service and beverage and food and fine dining. And that was definitely, he was 1,000% right. I mean, that was where I learned the business mostly.
So you said you like to cook. Do you know how to make potatoes, Anna? Because I feel like if there's one skill that I wish I had, that's the one.
That is an amazing dish, and it takes literally one person all day. That's what they do, is they slice these potatoes and season every single layer, and it is very labor-intensive, but it is one of my favorite dishes as well.
And your dad, and is he still involved in business decisions, or is he essentially like kind of retired now?
I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, he always jokes, don't turn these places into Chinese restaurants, but you know, he's not involved in the day to day, but I know how he would make decisions, and I operate the same way that he does.
Yeah.
But if we're going to, like, you know, by all means, he was highly involved in everything. Right now, he's super busy with what he does best is designing. And, so, you know, we walked that site at the Foundry, he fell in love with it. He's like, we need to make this happen. But no, he definitely, our whole family, we really, major business decisions, we work together on those.
Yeah. Is that what your dad is most passionate about, is designing like the layout of the restaurant?
Oh yeah. I mean, you would think that he went to design architecture school. I mean, when he gets plans, and I mean, he literally has, if you walk in his house right now, you'll see the huge old school blueprints, right? With his scale out, and he messes with it before the designer even does. So, but he's got such an impeccable eye, and really, I think that's part of a differentiator for us, is when you walk into Jeff Ruby restaurant, it looks like a Jeff Ruby restaurant. And those are, you know, he spends so much time traveling and finding all these antiques. Those are not
the chandeliers.
Yeah, all of those. Look, you can have that made, you know, you can design whatever you want, but and have it and find somebody to do it. But most of our pieces are items that he has personally found through his relationships with antiques, antique owners and store owners and things like that. So he's got a great eye, and our designer's great. So they've been, you know, they designed Lexington, which is really the inspiration for this restaurant. At the Foundry is much, much bigger. Big, you know, the horseshoe bar we had at the Waterfront is kind of bringing that concept back, live entertainment. And Nana Walls that opened completely up to Fountain Square, and so it's about 11,000 square feet. Our current footprint at the Steakhouse on 7th Street is about 8,800 square feet, with much less seating. And so we're thankful that Town Properties really gave us the permission to be able to do this. I know Steve talked about that on your podcast.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have happened if my father didn't have the relationship with Neil Bortz. And that they had a vision that, you know, we do believe that the events and catering business is good, and we support this.
And, you know, we had your dad on the podcast, I believe it was last fall, or maybe it was about this time last year. And he talked about, he still talks very affectionately about the Waterfront. And, you know, that it sounds like that will never come back. But you mentioned, like, is the fact that you're bringing the Horseshoe Bar into the Foundry on Fountain Square, Is that an homage to the fact that there's still passion there for the waterfront and what it did for the organization?
I think so. I think when you walk in this place, when it's built and when we're there and, you know, you sit down at the bar and you see whether it's a band up on the piano bar or a pianist, I think that there's just going to have that, you know, the waterfront's never coming back. And it was devastating when we came to terms that it really was never coming back. And it's just, you know, I heard Bob Deck's podcast and he said, oh, I could tell you the stories. I mean, everybody kind of, if you've been there, it was an experience. So that is the goal. And when we expanded into Louisville, Lexington, and Nashville, that was one of the main kind of, it's not a prototype, but it's a footprint, right? A very similar footprint that we were always kind of bummed that in Cincinnati, we can't bring that because we do not have the space that would support that type of a floor plan. And so when we walked the Foundry, and when I say it was serendipity that we even got the Foundry, I mean, it really was a call with Adam Gelter and myself. And I said, hey, I want to come see it. And I knew once we went, if I brought dad down there, he was going to fall in love because I knew it was about kind of the, you know, 11,000 square foot box that we could do whatever we want from a design standpoint. And so I think so. I hope that people walk in and feel kind of that throwback nostalgia of the waterfront, but also can see the evolution of design, and you can kind of see it's a little bit more refined and the finishes are going to be gorgeous. So it's collaborative, you know, and my family and myself, we also are highly involved in the design, and before this thing gets built, we'll all be have our fingerprints on it at some point.
Do you have a targeted opening date yet?
God willing, we will open September 2022, and so we're awesome. Well into design. We should start really getting into construction here in the next few months. So as soon as that restaurant opens, we'll close down the 7th Street location, demo all of that, gut all of that, and turn that into the events and off-premise catering center.
That's great. And you talk about, you know, going into the catering, and you've, in recent years, you've expanded into Columbus. I'm going to go down the list and you tell me if I've got it right. So you're in Columbus now, Louisville, Lexington, Nashville. Obviously, we have the Cincinnati.
Iterations. Yeah, John.
Did I get all the places where there's a...
Yeah, you said Columbus, right? So then we have three in Cincinnati. Jason, you know more about our company than I do. You do so much research. It's incredible.
Well, I'm always fascinated by, you know, your dad. Like, one of the first stories I did after I came to the Inquirer in 2012 was I sat down with your dad. I was just fascinated by his ability to build this and his story of overcoming a tough childhood and the fact that he came from nothing to build what he's built and his marketing ability. And now you tell me like he's got his real passion is design. You know, I've just always been fascinated by your dad and the story. And so I want to ask you this. So, and I remember him telling me, I can remember him telling me when you guys were looking at Nashville. Mm-hmm. Are you looking at any other cities right now?
We're not. No, okay. I really believe that it doesn't mean in the next few years. Like, we'll sit back down and go through another strategic planning process once we have these two businesses going. And that's part of my job is to be thinking 5-10 years out, which is what we've been doing. But I think for now, you know, opening this restaurant is going to take 100% of our focus, getting this thing, you know, even though we're transferring the employees, it's still, we're treating it like a brand new open, and then opening the event center and making sure that we, you know, this isn't just, let's just slap events up on the sign and call it a day. You know, we need to bring in the pros of, and we have pros, but bring in more talent, that really know catering and know this business. And I think the catering is specifically is a blue ocean for revenue for us. And that's going to be something that, because I just know, like, there are so many life experiences where you want really, really good five-star white glove service, food and beverage, all of that in Cincinnati. And I think that there's, as long as, you know, we have the right people, which we will, that this is going to be a really great business for us. At least I hope so. But I think that there's definitely a need and the community has great caterers already. So, you know, we respect all of them. We just think that there's enough to go around and we're excited to bring that Jeffrey B experience to catering. So I would say, you know, I'm not sitting here thinking right now, like, I can't wait to go do Indy or anywhere. I mean, not saying we'll never do it, but for now, our focus is definitely going to be this new place and events and catering.
All right. So I have a question. When you go into Jeff Ruby's, what do you order?
When I go to Jeff Ruby's, every single day, I will tell you, I eat a Caesar salad. So I have one for lunch. And I eat either a strip or a ribeye. And I don't eat the whole thing. I mean, I still have to, you know, be healthy, but we try steaks a lot. And so everything in moderation. But I think if I'm going in to just enjoy myself, I'm going to order a nice red wine. I'm going to order a Caesar salad and probably a ribeye.
I have a question too about, so just a fun question. My son is 8 in third grade and he's really starting to like steak. And I said, like, we got to take you to Jeff Ruby's. Mm-hmm. And what would you recommend? Which of the three sites would you recommend taking a first time Jeff Ruby's person to? Or especially, I mean, he's a kid, obviously. Mm-hmm. And what would you recommend that, you know, for a kid to order for their first Jeff Ruby's steak?
So, what location or what food?
Yeah,
order?
What location do you think would be best to take him to? And what steak do you think would be best to order for a first time, you know, Jeff Ruby's patron?
So the three restaurants in Cincinnati, it's like all three of my kids are different. If I want as a parent to be able to have kind of this, you know, experience with my kids, I'm probably going to go to the precinct and talk about the history of how this company got started. 40 years old, actually. We celebrate 40 years in business, which is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that's the restaurant that made it happen. And so, especially for, you know, a young boy, when you talk about the old, the Reds and the partners that got started, there's so much history there and it's quiet. It's, you know, it's more, it's not as lively.
Yeah,
it's
like an old police station.
old police station. Jeff Ruby's Steakhouse is your more wild kid, right? But that can be fun too. So I would probably recommend the precinct so that, you know, you guys have some good conversations and it's quiet and, you know, it's intimate and he'll always remember that. And I would start off probably with the filet, which is what I start my kids off on. You know, so it's an easy kind of gateway steak. And then as they get used to that, that's what my kids like the most too, 8 and 10. So
I love it. The gateway steak.
We did Jeff Ruby's for Jack's 13th birthday. That was his first visit, and he went right for it. He went for the ribeye.
Oh, good for him.
Love it.
Awesome. He had so much fun people watching. Like, he just
it
was...
is good. It's fun people watching. And we really do. People don't probably know this, but when my brothers and I got into the executive leadership team, when we came to kind of corporate and started really getting involved in the business more so than just, you know, where we were serving and in operations, a huge emphasis was on children and making sure children felt welcome. You know, we got those little tumblers, sippy cups and bibs and onesies and all the things, and did a full training program. Not only is it the next generation, but as parents, all three of us as parents, you know, we wanted a place where you didn't feel stressed out as a parent bringing your kids, to the point where sometimes servers would be like, do you want me to take your kid for a walk through the kitchen? You know, we really wanted to make sure that families felt comfortable, that parents still could go out to a nice restaurant, have a nice cocktail, have nice food, and still get great service. And you don't have to be at a quick service restaurant to get that. So we hope your family, your kids come in and they can see kind of what we do to make sure that children and parents feel welcome.
Hey, I want to ask you one other thing, Brittany. And I know this is a, you know, it's a labor of love for you. And I know your dad did the same thing. He wrote a book and you've written a book and it hasn't come out yet, but talk about, just give us a little synopsis of why you did it and what it's about.
Well, I wrote a book. Everybody, I think, should write a book. I think everybody has just an amazing testimony, an amazing story about their life. And for me, you would expect, it's called Five Star Life. And it's not probably what you think of five stars. So five stars is what I grew up. Five stars was the peak, right? That's what Pauly Campbell, I remember my dad would, God, that was the most important person was, is, are we going to get five stars from Pauly Campbell?
Really?
And here's the way that we do it. And so it was ingrained in me from a very young child that five stars is the best. And the concept for this book is you would probably imagine that I've had my life kind of handed over as on a silver platter, handed to me on a silver platter, and that, you know, grew up with a very, outspoken celebrity father. And I had a great childhood. I really did. But as I grew up and went through life experiences that were very, very difficult. And the five star life concept is me being a very, very open and vulnerable, really to give hope to people, especially in my industry, that there's a lot of darkness. And that I think God wants us to live a five star life. I believe that we are supposed to live our best lives, even in the circumstances that we have right now going on all around us. That is very depressing. There's still a way to find joy and peace and live your best life, your five star life. And so, you know, I talk a lot about growing up as Jeff Ruby's daughter. I talk a lot about kind of, marriage in there, parenting. It's a little bit of everything. And then COVID. The last couple of chapters are just about my involvement with the restaurant industry and COVID. But it's to use my testimony to hopefully give people some hope into their own lives.
So, well, a lot of people had some downtime during COVID. It was your busiest time and you thought I should write a book too.
I know. And I was getting my MBA. I still am working on that. I took like a quarter off, but, very, very busy time. It took me, I had already signed a book deal with a publisher, before COVID hit, and then COVID hit. And I actually work from home on Mondays. So that's kind of my day to just go into my home office and not get distracted and not be around people. So for 3 months, I wrote a book on Mondays. And it was, even you would think that that's a terrible time to write a book. It was like journaling for me. And so I just, you know, started on it and it actually helped me get through COVID.
Great stuff, Brittany. And really, really appreciate you taking time to join us here today. I know you're out of town right now, and to take the time to share your story and the story of Jeff Ruby's. And, you know, we covered a lot here today, and I just want to say congratulations to you, your family, on your success, your continued success, the expansion over to the Foundry on Fountain Square, into the catering business as well. And, you know, it's awesome, and we'll look forward to continue to keep up with you and the success of the business. And also, make sure to tell your dad I said, hey.
I will. And I will reiterate this. I know we talked about this when you called in the intro, but I genuinely am a fan. I think that, you know, your podcast and what I've learned, first of all, you guys do so much research. I mean, Sherry, listening to you as Steve Liepert, I mean, thank you for what you guys do, because our community is unlike any. I think Cincinnati is just the best city in the nation, and your podcast and what you guys do really does matter, and it's enlightening, it's insightful. I learn a lot as a leader, as a business person, and just, you know, as a citizen. So I hope, you know, you guys know how appreciated, and I feel honored to be on your podcast. So thank you so much.
Thank you
And
we feel honored that you would say that. So
yeah,
it's really, really kind of you. And yeah.
All right, Jason, will see you with his two young children at Jeff Ruby's. Good luck, Jason.
I'll see you at the precinct, which is where your brother.
Let me know when you go. We'll take good care of him.
You're the best.
All right.
Thanks, Brittany.
Thanks. Bye
bye. Bye bye. All right. Thanks again to Brittany Ruby Miller and Sherry. A couple thoughts. Jeff Ruby Steakhouse on Fountain Square. Jeff Ruby Steakhouse is big time. Fountain Square is big time. I think those two coming together is that's awesome. And I can just see Jeff Ruby being you could tell Brittany's excited. I'm sure Jeff is incredibly excited. And also Brittany referenced her book, and we want to share the foreword is done by Kathy Lee Gifford from the Today Show. And that book, Five Star Life, comes out September 21st. There's pre-sale on Amazon right now. So check it out. Sounds like a really good story. And now, I mean, I think we've already covered our So Cincinnati moment of the week, right, with Jeff Ruby.
There's more, though.
There's more. Brought to you by Cincinnati.com. And I will provide it this week. Wah, wah. Now, family and I went to Cincinnati Museum Center over the weekend on a cloudy, overcast Sunday. We decided, hey, we've seen billboards around town. Great job, Elizabeth, for the OmniMax.
The CEO of the museum center, Elizabeth Pierce.
Sorry. I'm getting a little too conversational.
Past podcast guest.
Past podcast guest for the OmniMax, believe it's Black Bear Rainforest. White Bear Rainforest, something like that. Because there were black bears and there was this unique white bear that is in this rainforest up in British Columbia.
Had more fun, you or your kids.
I mean, it was so awesome. Like, it's just so cool. So we went to OmniMax, my wife, our two sons, and, you know, just...
That's a classic Cincinnati moment, taking your kids to the museum center.
And... it's just magical walking through that building.
We call it
just,
in our house, downtown trains.
Downtown trains.
Just because Jack loved the trains, because you could, from up at, you know, the top floor, you can watch the trains and go to the Children's Museum Center. And then at Christmas time, the trains had moved there. Yeah. So we're a little old for the Children's Museum in our household, but they are really, really special memories.
Oh, sorry. Beer guy Silent Phil says it's Great Bear Rainforest. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Phil. I should have known that, you know, because I just watched it. But
I mean, your head's stuffed.
There's grizzly bears, black bears. There's this unique white bear that is in this rainforest, and it was just, I love that stuff, and the kids love it, and we had fun, and we walk out, and it's like 3:30, and they had already eaten lunch, but we decided, like, oh, we're gonna go get something else to eat, and I hadn't eaten lunch, so we're like. And I recommend Mecklenburg Gardens, authentic German cuisine. And my son, my oldest son, Reed, is super into like different things and history in other countries and food from other countries. He gets this monthly package of, he got it for a Christmas gift where he gets some snacks from different countries. His grandmother got it for him. And so we're like, let's go to Mecklenburg, but they were closed. And so where do we end up, Sherry? Again, fitting for the Cincinnati moment.
Should I get out my crystal ball? No, that would just be stupid.
Fitting for the Cincinnati moment, we go to the Clifton Skyline. And
featured on the Simpsons episode.
Featured on the Simpsons
episode. Earlier this year.
That's right. Was that earlier this year?
I think it was.
I've lost track of time.
Long ago.
So we end up there. That was a perfect Cincinnati day. The Museum Center, OmniMax, and Clifton Skyline. The best skyline. The first skyline where I ever had skyline. When I went to UC. So
Delhi Skyline has been redone.
And redone. It looks pretty cool. It does. It looks very cool. Get the big glass window thing. So.
All right, Jay.
All right.
I gotta get back to my council
get
list.
Back
come
to
on.
Your list. I have a feeling you're gonna have to write a few more names on there. So we'll catch you next week.